Okay, so let's dive into a Virginia Supreme Court case that I think will really make you think about the fine print of gift giving,
Yeah.
especially when you talk about gifts made on someone's deathbed.
It's a fascinating case. It really shows how good intentions can sometimes get tangled up in legal technicalities.
Exactly. We're talking about the case of Essing Moo v. Smart, which centers around gifts causa mortis. So gifts made when someone believes they're close to death. And get this, the whole case hinges on the legal concept of delivery.
You see, for a gift to be valid legally, it's not enough for the giver to just intend to give something.
Right.
The law also requires a clear act of delivery, meaning the giver has to actually relinquish control over the gift.
Okay, so let's set the scene. We have William Yee and Essing Moo, who had a close personal and business relationship for 19 years. And back in 1985, Yee was diagnosed with a serious heart condition.
Yeah, and that heart condition becomes a critical factor later on because it plays into Yee's belief that he's nearing the end of his life.
Okay, so fast forward to March of 1989, Yee is feeling very ill and believes he's dying just 2 days before he passes away. He gives Wu three checks.
Wow.
The first one is for $42,700 from Signet Bank, which actually closes out his account there.
Okay.
The second check is for a whopping $80,000 from Central Fidelity Bank, and that represents most of his savings accounts.
And to add to that, the very next day, he gives her a third check for $1,900, also from Central Fidelity, to close out his checking account. He even says to her, "This is for you if I die." So it seems pretty clear that he wanted to make sure she was taken care of.
It does, yeah. But here's where things get a little more complicated.
Yeah.
Yee passes away the day after giving her that last check. Wu goes to cash the two smaller checks totaling $44,600, and those go through without a hitch.
However, when she tries to cash the big one, that $80,000 check, she runs into a roadblock and then John Smart, the administrator of Yee's estate.
And Smart is not convinced that those checks were legally valid gifts and files a lawsuit against Wu demanding all the money back for the estate.
The trial court actually sides with Smart, ruling that simply giving those checks didn't meet the legal requirement of delivering the money itself. So Wu decides to appeal, and that's how this case ends up at the Virginia Supreme Court.
Now, what's interesting here is that everyone agrees that Yee intended for Wu to have the money. So why is this even a case? Why didn't the court just honor his wishes?
That's the key question here, isn't it? And it all boils down to this concept of delivery. In the eyes of the law, good intentions aren't always enough. There are specific rules that must be followed, especially for gifts made in anticipation of death, like gifts causa mortis.
Okay, so let's unpack this whole delivery thing because it's obviously the crux of the matter.
Yeah.
What was the court's reasoning for deciding that handing over the checks wasn't sufficient to actually transfer the money to Wu?
Well, the court's argument centers around the nature of a check. They point out that a check isn't actual money, it's essentially an order to the bank.
So even though Yee handed Wu those physical pieces of paper, he still retained some control over the funds.
Exactly, until the bank actually pays out the check. The person who wrote it, in this case, you could technically stop payment or even close the account.
Which means he didn't fully relinquish control just by handing over the checks. It's almost like giving someone an IOU instead of cash.
Yeah.
But why does this matter so much legally? Couldn't you argue that his intentions were clear enough?
Well, that's where the specific requirements for gifts causa mortis come into play. Remember, these are gifts made in anticipation of death,
Right.
and the law has established very clear rules to make sure that they are handled properly.
So you're saying there's more to it than just expressing a wish for someone to have something after you're gone?
Absolutely. For a gift causa mortis to be legally valid, it has to meet several conditions.
Okay.
First, it has to involve personal property, which those funds in the bank account certainly do.
Okay, that makes sense.
Second, it has to be made during the giver's last illness or when they are in immediate danger of death. Given Yi's heart condition and his belief that he was dying, that condition seems to be met as well.
Right. So far, so good. So what are the other requirements?
The third requirement is that the giver has to be aware of their impending death and make the gift because of that belief. And fourth, the giver has to intend for the gift to take effect only if they actually die.
It seems like those conditions were met too, based on the circumstances. So where does this whole delivery issue fit in?
It's the fifth and arguably the most crucial requirement. There has to be actual delivery of the property for the gift to be legally binding. And that's the heart of the legal debate in this case.
Right.
The court really grappled with whether handing over those checks truly constituted delivering the money itself.
This is where it gets really interesting for me. Even though Yee physically gave the checks to Wu, the court said that wasn't the same as giving her the actual money. Why is that?
To bolster their argument, the court turned to a really powerful legal tool, the Uniform Commercial Code, or the UCC. You've probably heard of it.
Of course, it governs all sorts of commercial transactions, but what does the UCC have to say about checks and gift giving?
Well, the UCC doesn't consider a check to be an automatic transfer of ownership. It's not an assignment of the money itself. Well, think of it more like an IOU from the bank. The bank is promising to pay the amount on the check to the person who's named,
right?
But only when that person presents it for payment.
So until that happens, the money technically belongs to the account holder, which was Yi in this case.
That's precisely the court's interpretation.
Wow.
And because Yi died before that $80,000 check could be cashed, they ruled that he never actually relinquished control of the funds. The gift wasn't technically complete in the eyes of the law.
Wow, that seems like a tough break. For Fru Yi's intentions were so clear, but these legal technicalities really got in the way. It makes you wonder if there was any other legal avenue she could have pursued.
You're right to bring that up. Wu actually made another argument in court claiming she was entitled to the money based on the concept of a constructive trust. Have you ever encountered that term before?
Vaguely, it has something to do with fairness and preventing unjust enrichment.
Right, exactly. A constructive trust is a legal remedy that's used to prevent someone from unfairly benefiting from property they shouldn't rightfully possess. It's a way for the court to right a wrong, essentially.
Okay, so how did Wu try to apply that to this situation with the checks?
Well, she argued that she had contributed financially to Yi's accounts over the years.
Okay.
And she believed that these contributions gave her a claim to at least a portion of the money.
Right.
Even if the court didn't uphold the validity of the checks as gifts.
So she was essentially saying she had an ownership stake in the money, regardless of the checks. Did the court buy that argument?
They didn't. The court determined that there wasn't enough evidence to prove that Wu's contributions were intended to create joint ownership of the accounts. They saw it more as her helping with household expenses or supporting Yi not acquiring ownership of the funds.
It seems like they were drawing a fine line between contributing to someone's finances and having actual legal ownership. But why would the court be so hesitant to grant a constructive trust in this situation? It seems like a pretty clear case of someone deserving the money.
The court was concerned about setting a precedent that would undermine the entire system of legal requirements for gifts, causa mortis. If you could just bypass those requirements by claiming a constructive trust, the whole system would lose its meaning and enforceability.
That makes sense. It would open the door to all sorts of potential disputes and make it harder to determine someone's true intentions when giving a gift. So in the end, did the court rule in favor of the estate?
They did. They upheld the trial court's decision, finding that the checks didn't constitute valid gifts causa mortis because that crucial element of delivery hadn't been met. And they also rejected Wu's argument for a constructive trust. It's a case that really highlights how important it is to understand the legal nuances of gift giving, especially when dealing with gifts made in anticipation of death.
This is a fascinating case that underscores the importance of following the letter of the law, even when dealing with sensitive matters, like someone's final wishes. What are some key takeaways our listeners should keep in mind? This whole case really drives home the point that we need to be incredibly careful when making arrangements for our assets after we're gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's not enough to just have good intentions. You have to follow the legal rules to the letter.
Absolutely. It's a stark reminder that when it comes to matters of estate planning, precision and clarity are paramount.
So if someone wants to make sure that their loved ones receive specific assets after they pass away, are checks totally off the table?
Well, checks can definitely be tricky, as this case clearly demonstrates. You know, if you're dealing with a situation where a gift is contingent on your death, using a check introduces a level of uncertainty. After all, you could pass away before the check is cashed, making the gift incomplete in the eyes of the law.
So what are some safer alternatives if someone wants to ensure that their wishes are carried out? What should they do?
Well, there are several options that offer more security and avoid the ambiguity associated with checks. Setting up a trust is one avenue. This allows you to spell out precisely how and when your assets should be distributed, and you can even appoint a trustee to manage everything according to your instructions.
Okay, that sounds like a more formal and comprehensive approach, but it also seems like it would offer more peace of mind.
It definitely does. Another option is to use a cashier's check or a certified check. These types of checks are guaranteed by the bank, meaning the funds are already set aside. So this eliminates the risk of the check bouncing or being revoked after you're gone.
So with those options, you're essentially taking away that uncertainty of whether the funds will be available when the recipient tries to access them. It sounds like a more foolproof method, especially when dealing with deathbed gifts.
Exactly. And if you prefer a more straightforward route, you could always consider adding the intended recipient as a joint owner on your bank accounts. That way, they automatically inherit the funds upon your death, bypassing the need for a separate gift transaction altogether.
That seems like the simplest solution. But it's crucial to think through the implications of joint ownership while you're still alive. You're essentially giving someone access to your funds before you're passing.
That's a very important point. Ultimately, the best approach depends on individual circumstances, and it's always wise to consult with an estate planning attorney who can guide you toward the most appropriate strategy.
It's amazing how a seemingly simple act, like giving someone a check, can have such complex legal ramifications. This case really highlights why professional legal advice is indispensable when it comes to these matters.
I couldn't agree more. This deep dive into Ishing Wu v. Smart shows us that understanding the legal nuances of gift giving, especially in the context of deathbed gifts, is essential for protecting your intentions and ensuring they are carried out as you wish.
Well, it's a powerful lesson in the importance of clarity, precision, and seeking expert legal guidance when dealing with these sensitive issues. This case certainly gives us all a lot to think about when it comes to planning for the future. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Ishing Wu v. Smart. We'll see you next time.